Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is SW Pod Sounds and Stories, and you're listening to your new favorite host, Mandy. So, SW stands for CCSISI Wote, Wote, which means all of us in Swahili. And this is the podcast where you can engage with commentary on Black music and Black literature from the perspective of a casual reader and everyday listener. And the reason why I say engage, yeah, that might sound like a serious word, but it's because this is a two-way street. I like music and books, you lot like music and books, so this is a space where we can come together and chat about our shared interests. Hence, why I chose the name CC Wote, because this is quite literally a shared space for all of us. And this episode, we have a first for the podcast. Round of applause for us. Be clapping where you are. We have a guest, ladies and gentlemen and people them. We have a guest with us this week, our first guest of the podcast. And I'm going to let our esteemed guests introduce themselves so we can know to whomst we are listening to. But yeah, she's great. She's amazing. She's fantastic. So take it away, mystery guest.
I was trying so hard not to laugh when you're like, to whomst we're listening to. Hi, I'm Jessica. I am said esteemed guest.
Yep.
I don't really know what to say to you guys. You guys are making me a bit shy.
Guys, let's, you know, make her feel comfortable. Don't you making my friend feel shy.
Take it easy on me.
Sorry, let's carry on.
What Adele said. Yeah, I am a writer, which I don't think that qualifies me to make any opinions on books, but I'll try my best. But don't be expecting academic levels of criticism. But I am a writer, a playwright, and a poet. And I'm also a newly qualified doctor.
Woo!
Which is, yeah, that's a bit weird.
Congratulations. No, that's huge. That's huge. Yes. I told you she's a very, very just fantastic and amazing person. Very talented as well. And also my friend, to be honest with you. Like, you know, sometimes you have to put on for the people around you. So I was like, let's na collabo, you know? And the book of this episode is actually by her favorite writer. Am I right?
Yeah, that is correct.
So we're not going to be giving away the book just yet. So just make sure you keep listening to find out. But that's, you know, that's the connection here. And obviously, this is my friend, guys. Like, come on.
Period.
So I'm going to break down how this episode is going to work. So we're going to be discussing a song and a book that share a common theme. In terms of the episode breakdown, coming up, we have Let Me Tell You. Let me T-A-L-E-U. Don't let that go over your head. Which is where you guys write in with your contributions, personal stories, thoughts, opinions. But the only rule is that these have to be connected to something in the previous episode. It could be the theme, could be the song, the book, a song from the playlist, literally whatever, as long as it's part of the previous episode. So that's Let Me Tell You. Then we're going to be going into sounds. This is where we talk about the song of the episode in relation to the theme. Following that, we're going to be going into stories. We do exactly the same for the book of the episode. And finally, we'll be ending with soundtracking stories. And this is a playlist that is updated with every single episode with 5 songs that are also connected to the episode's theme. Okay, so this is for you guys to stay engaged, you know, in between episodes when there's nothing to do, then when you run out of episodes to listen to. Okay, so for this episode, the theme is rejection. It's not you, it's me. Okay, so that is the theme for this episode. And you might be wondering why I chose this theme, right? So I basically read the book recommended by Jessica. And thank you very much, Jessica.
It's so mad. I forgot that we're still keeping the book mysterious. I was like, why is she talking like that?
Obviously, Jessica knows the book because, you know, we had to do preparation things and she had read it already. Anyway, whatever. But I'd read the book and then basically thought about discussing it in the context of like this theme because of something that happens towards the end of the book where, spoiler alert, one of the characters dies. I'm not going to tell you who, but somebody dies. It's deep. And and then the kind of like events after that, I was like, rah, like, I think it would be interesting to talk about rejection in the context of what is going on in the book. So I am now gonna give you a few clues so you can guess or try and guess what song and what book we're gonna be discussing today. So for the song, okay, so this song is, I picked this song at the time when I was kind of like thinking about this podcast and ideas and thinking about how it could be structured, rete. And then at the same time, personally, you know, I was going through one of these things that you call rejection. And I was listening to this song. I was banging out this song because honestly, like, it was just helping me to get through. And it's by one of my favorite artists, a UK babe called Hamza. And it's off her 2023 EP called Rush. It's a small project, so it does narrow down which of her songs it could be. So if you think you can guess it, try and guess it. But we're going to keep it mysterious for now. But make sure you keep listening on, because obviously you're going to find out what song it is. And then for the book, as I said before, it is by Jessica's favorite author. You don't know who that is, but I'm going to reveal to you that it is, in fact, Caleb Azuma Nelson. So there's only two books that this guy's written, okay? So you got a 50-50 chance if you're going to guess. Two books, take your guess. It's one of the two, obviously, because he hasn't published anything else, okay? But again, we're keeping it, you get? So keep listening to find out which book we're going to be discussing. All right, enough intro and talking from me. Jessica, how are you?
I really hate that question. I feel like I always forget everything that I've like ever done in life whenever someone asks me like how I'm doing.
About your life story, just
I know. I'm fine. I'm doing good. Uh-huh. I mean, honestly, like, I'm just happy that we're out of summer now, in a way. Like, I'm really sad for summer to be gone, but at the same time, I take the train a lot.
Fez.
And, like, the smell, the smell in the summer months. I was telling you, like I can't remember how many weeks ago it was when I was on the train, and, like, the smell I smelt was so diabolical that, like, I genuinely, like,
yeah, even when I was traumatized.
Yeah, like, after I got off the train, like, I still felt like I was gonna
residue.
It was like every time I breathed in, I was like, I'm like, feel like I'm gonna gag, because I was like, I could, and I would get like flashbacks to the smell, and I'd just be like, this is just so horrible. So like, I'm happy now that like winter is coming.
Yeah,
everyone is like, the people that don't wear deodorant, like, do you know what I mean, there's less pressure on their armpits right now.
Yeah, true.
So like, that's like, you know, there's a silver lining in every season, and like winter is like the season of, though it's cold,
yeah,
it's like less much smell. Yeah, there's like less neutral fermentation smell. Time exactly. So that's what I appreciate it. About that, that's what God tells us to do, look at the bright side in every situation, and that's
that
my
is
bright
very
side.
True. No,
so that's how I'm
being
doing.
Optimistic, positive outlook.
Exactly.
Okay, well, that's lovely to hear. I am also doing okay, guys, doing okay. I was recently bamboozled and left dumbfounded by a certain man recently. We won't get into it too much. Just know that the switch up was crazy. The switch up was
deadly.
Deadly, honestly.
Switch up was deadly.
It was like, you know, whiplash. That's what I feel like.
Neck back.
That's
up,
yeah, honestly, finished. When I just saw that mess, anyway, so
life will actually humble you so quickly.
honestly, but we move, innit, we move regardless. So that's me right now, but otherwise I'm doing calm. So you guys, how are you guys? Look at me being rude and forget my question. How are you guys doing? Say something wherever you are, whether you're at home, on the train, on a walk. If you're in public and people look at you sideways, just don't even mind them. Yeah. Don't mind that side eye, because they don't understand the relationship that we have. Yeah. They don't know a good thing. That's their life is in shambles. They don't know a good thing. So just, you know, you focus and you just express yourself and say how you're feeling to your favorite podcast host. We understand what we have, you know? So we're going to get into the next segment, which is Let Me Tell You. So don't let that go over your head. Let Me T-A-L-E-U. Yeah, that's a double entendre for you silly people.
Not the French.
I know. We have somebody that sent in a voice note obviously on the theme of grateful and love. And I just want to clarify that the love doesn't have to be romantic. It's just, you know, when you're appreciative and grateful and you have that realization that, rah, like, I have so much love in my life, or this person is showing me so much love, or I love this person so much. It doesn't even have to be something that's coming from the outside in. It can be something that's coming from the inside out, kind of thing. So yeah, let's listen to this kind of personal account, and I'll have my thoughts and share my thoughts afterwards.
A time I was grateful, or just kind of remember that I was grateful to have love in my life, was during my homecoming, man. I'm not gonna lie, coming back to London from Harvard and obviously being away for a year, like, you know, I've never been away from home that long. So I've never experienced, I guess, that long-term distance from majority of people in my life, loved ones and friends. And I think I took for granted, like, the availability of seeing people, because when I was away, it was different. Like, the love was still there, but it was some people I just didn't really speak to. I didn't speak to them on a regular or every day or whatever. And when I came back and I saw people for the first time in a year, just that feeling, it was like that feeling, well, firstly, just the love, the proudness, like, the way I was received was a lot of, just pride. And I was like, oh, right, like, you're there, and you're in it, and you're doing everything. It just feels like you're alone, and it's just you and, like, kind of versus the world. And sometimes you forget that there are all these people rooting for you back home. So coming back and seeing people be like, oh, I'm so proud, I'm so gassed, I'm so whatever. It was like, shit, like, even when it's not physically there, and even if you don't notice it, your love exists. Sometimes you just notice it more or less. And, you know, even with space, time, whatever, the fact that you can go away for 4 years, 2 years, 1 year, come back and it's the same love, kind of just shows the power of love, and the power of it, like, beyond convenience or availability. So I'm very, very grateful. And I think that realization or motivation allows me to be a bit more grateful in characterizing love in different ways. Love can look distant sometimes. Love can be distant. Sometimes you distance yourself from someone because you love them. That's something I actually just had to do with somebody in my life. So, yeah.
Okay, so, yeah, like, obviously, this is about kind of familial love and friendship. And I think in this case, it's a example of how distance can make the heart grow fonder. And I think sometimes that saying is maybe taken too literally, because obviously distance can, you might talk to the person less, obviously you're seeing them less, your interactions might look different to how it is before. And if you're somebody who, say, the fact that you're talking to somebody every day and or you're seeing them every day is a sign or like a marker of your love for them and their love for you, when that isn't there, that love has to take a different form. So I think that's one part of it. But reason I say distance makes the heart grow fonder is because when you return to that person or that place or whatever it is, I feel like you have a newfound appreciation. And I think that is the fondness that they're talking about. Like, your heart opens to appreciate in a different way and be grateful for the fact that you're now returning after that distance, if that makes sense. So yeah, very, very heartwarming. Thank you so much for sharing. If you want to be involved in the next episode in the Let Me Tell You section, just send in your stories, your personal accounts, your dilemmas, whatever it is, to swpoduk@gmail.com. That's swpoduk@gmail.com. Or you can DM us on our socials. Our socials, all our ads are swpoduk. And share. Remember, it has to be maximum 500 words if you're writing in, or 2 minutes if you're sending in a voice note. And of course, it has to be on the theme, one of the themes of the previous episodes, so inspired by something within the previous episodes. So for sounds this week, oh sorry, is it too loud?
A little bit.
Oh sorry,
it's fine.
For sounds this week, I'm gonna remind you of the episode theme. It is rejection. It's not you, it's me. And I can now reveal to you that the song for this episode is in fact Doing Time by Hamza. Okay, and there it is.
So with your friends, now I'm drinking away like a sinner. You gave a soliloquy to explain all your reasoning. It just sounds like you got feelings too.
Okay, so I'm gonna give you a little bit of background on Hamza, right, and who she is, because you just heard the song, now you're probably wondering, who's this babe? So she's a London babe, East London girly, I think Acne or something like that.
Acne.
Acne, mate. She's Kenyan and Zambian, so East African babes like me. Singer-songwriter. I would say she, in my opinion, she can do almost any genre, especially songwriting-wise, but her main sort of focus is like sort of like soulful pop kind of vibe. She's got like a very, very soulful voice. And then obviously Pen Game is extremely strong. I feel like you really feel everything that she's feeling in the song when you listen to it.
For real.
In terms of like what she doing and what she been doing, she's toured with Sinead Hart. She's performed at Glastonbury. She's been featured on, like her music's been featured on shows such as Love Island, Grey's Anatomy, later with Jules Holland, that's on the BBC. Worked with so many artists, Tiwa Savage, Getz, Wretch Free 2, Notes, Travis McCoy, that's a throwback. Do you remember that song? I wanna be a billionaire.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. His name is Travis. That does not suit like that
really?
Song.
Oh,
I wouldn't
that
be
song.
Like, oh, like I'm listening to this and the guy who wrote that is called Travis.
He suits it though, like his aesthetic.
Yeah, like I can imagine his aesthetic, but like I would never expect, oh, like who wrote that song?
Yeah.
Travis.
Yeah.
I think Travis. Everyone thinks that Bruno Mars wrote that song.
He might have. It does give Bruno Mars. Maybe I haven't checked like the credits and stuff like that.
I definitely thought it was Bruno Mars.
But all right, so Jessica, you listened to the song. What did you think? Thoughts?
I thought I don't want to go like too English scholar on it.
Nah,
but
it.
Like,
let's do it.
When I was listening to the song, first thing that hit me was, because the first time I listened to the song was from, you know, if you have an iPhone, you can like send someone snippets of like songs on iMessage. Like you can preview the song before you actually press into the song on whatever app you have. So I like previewed it from iMessage. And just like Hamza's voice is just so smooth, like it's like butter, like I was like, I know I'm gonna enjoy like listening to this, and I plan to like listen to it on my train journey, because I was like, this is gonna be so like relaxing. Cozy. It's gonna be like dusky when I go, and it's gonna be like just perfect.
Ambiance.
It's like, you know, it's a very like, though it's like a heartbreak song, it's also like the vocals are so sultry, so I feel like you can really get that sense of like there's like desire and like yearning here, which like pairs really well with like the lyrics. But I said I was going to go English scholar, so let me talk about the lyrics.
Okay.
The thing that I found really interesting was this idea like doing time.
Yes.
Yeah, because I was like, it really suits the theme of rejection. I mean, shout out to you for choosing the song. It really suits the theme of rejection
come on now.
I was like,
podcast out here.
Yeah. It's this idea of almost like rejection is like a prison.
Yes.
Which, I mean, like, we haven't
gone
on to the book
yet.
That's
literally in my notes.
Wow.
That is literally in my notes.
I promise you, like, she didn't tell me anything about the song.
Verbatim, rejection can feel like a prison sentence.
No, but for real. And I was like, this idea of like doing time and like, it just suits the book so well, though I know we're not talking about the book now. I was like, wow, what like an apt song. And the book, I mean, have we said the title of the book?
Can I say the title of the book?
Okay, yeah. The book.
No spoilers.
Can I say anything about the book at all? Like, not spoilers, just in terms of like the way the book is written. The book is like very like lyrically, musically written. There's loads of like references to music and like song. And for a writer who's so like focused on that and like kind of integrating musicality into his writing, I think it's very interesting that you chose a musical artist that is so like metaphorical. And like, I think just very like, I think a lot of songwriters, not all songwriters are poets.
Yeah, or storytellers.
Exactly. Some people are good at writing songs that sound good and you can like listen to and have a good time, but you're not going to sit there and be like, oh my gosh, like
this is a
lyricist. You know what I mean? Like, understand the human condition now. Whereas like I feel like Hamza, she feels like somebody that her lyricism feels very pointed,
mm-hmm.
and she's trying to express kind of like an emotional or like a semantic, like, you know, there's like meaning there, like a semantic field of like thought. Like, she wants you to like feel the emotion, even if you're not listening to the lyrics the whole time. Like, she wants you to feel it based on like the way the song's been like constructed, and I feel like that's very similar to the book as well, and how like Caleb writes as well.
Yeah,
it's very feeling led.
Yeah, agree. Heavy agree. What have I written here? I've written that I also said that it can feel debilitating. So, like, rejection can just throw you off, basically. And I think you get that from the song as well. Because there's certain, like, there's obviously a technical term for it, but there's certain, like, it almost feels like voice, you know, like, before you start crying, your voice cracks a bit. I feel like sometimes the way that she, like, slide does her like little slides and like the little lilts in her voice is almost like that.
She's an emotional singer.
Yeah,
like, she's not just singing it to like get, you know, get a check.
Yeah,
like bills are due, rent is due. Like, she has one last chance. She's properly singing it.
Like at the beginning when she's like, "So we're just friends," like that little friends. That was like, it's like. Like, she doesn't even want to say, it feels like to me, it's almost like she doesn't even want to say it because she's like, nah, we're not friends.
It's a dirty word.
Do you know what I mean? It's like reluctantly almost saying like, oh, okay, so I guess we're just friends kind of thing. Yeah. Do you
it's
know
really
what I mean?
Interesting that like, even though she's a singer, and I think that people think if you're going to be a good singer, you have to be able to portray emotion through singing.
Mm-hmm.
What she did there was put a pause before a word. Mm-hmm. She didn't do anything.
Yes.
And that was where like a lot of the emotion was held. Because she could have just said, "So we're just friends."
Yes.
She's like, "So we're just friends."
Yeah.
Which is
it's
like,
almost like you can hear the sigh.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, friends. Like, friends. Do you know what I mean? And that silence speaks volumes, honestly, speaks volumes.
Silence is deafening.
For real.
Like
for
John
real.
Green said.
And, like, I feel like throughout the whole of the song, you can kind of feel like her tone is, like, deflated. Mm. Do you know what I mean? There's not, like, it's not, like, a super energetic, there's not a lot of, like, punchy energy behind the way she's singing. I don't know, it feels, like, very, like, melancholy, very, like, blue kind of vibe, which I guess fits because that's probably how she's feeling and usually how you feel when you've been rejected from literally anything. It doesn't even need to be a heartbreak. It can be, I mean, it doesn't even need to be romantic. It can be literally anything that you're rejected from, right? Okay, I think we're good in terms of the song. I'm happy with that. Happy with that? Anything else to say? Anything to add?
There was one thing I wanted to say. Which, can I say it now?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. There's one thing I wanted to say, which I thought, you know the whole thing about the song being about doing time and it's like kind of like a prison, rejection feels like a prison. I was like, so if rejection is a prison, then that means was like loving this man the crime? Like, and I'm just like, you know what I'm saying? Like, because then like, I was trying to remember what she said.
Because
she's saying like, oh, like in my dreams I still see you and I hate that I miss you and the way that you held me because I'm doing time.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's just, in a way it's giving me this kind of like weird Bonnie and Clyde relationship.
Yeah.
But like one of them's actually like, you know when like criminals, like a criminal duo, like they get arrested but only one of them goes to prison and the other one. I feel like it's really evoking that kind of sense of like, here's almost like this like this like love I have for you, but also there's like this layer of resentment that like you're free and like you don't have these feelings, so you're free, but like I'm kind of trapped in these feelings and you just get to move on and just live your life.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm just like, oh,
Hamza,
she just hurt him.
Loving him was the crime. Ladies and gentlemen, Jessica. Give it up for Jessica. Wow. She said English scholared. English scholarly. Scholarly English.
Stop.
Come on now. You don't know English. Bruv, that was analysis, dissection, P-E-E. Or P-E-A.
Yeah, I think I had P-E-A. P-E-A. Did you have P-E-A or P-E-E?
I had P-E-E.
P.
P. But either way, it's P, isn't it?
Yes, P. So. One's a vegetable and one's the bodily process.
One's the P.
The P.
All right, cool. So next up, we have our story segment. I'm going to remind you a lot of the theme. So it is rejection. It's not you, it's me. And now we can actually finally reveal what the book is. Okay. And Jessica, would you like to do the honors?
Oh, of course. Yeah. Okay.
Don't be too shy.
The book is Open Water.
Woo!
Bazuma Nelson. One of the greatest authors of our generation. He's up and coming, and he's really coming. And I really honestly like...
And he's really up as well.
Do you know what I mean? He's really up and he's really coming. Like, emphasis, like that phrase is not... It's not, I'm not just using it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I actually met him recently and it was so embarrassing. It was so embarrassing. Because... Like, I don't think that many people see authors or like writers as like celebrities, but like to me, they are, because obviously I like writing. Mm-hmm. So if I see someone that's doing something amazing with their craft, I'm going to be like, oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw him outside of Tate Modern, I think.
Yeah, Tate Modern.
A few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in the queue to get in because it was one of the Tate Lates, and he was also getting in the queue, but like way like beyond me. It was the Little Sims Tate Late, so there's loads of people there.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw him walk with one of his friends, and I literally went, hi. And he, because I was scared he was gonna walk away before I got to say hi to him. And I didn't know if I was gonna see him in the Tate Late, and he was just so ridded out. He was like, he still said hi to me, but I could tell he was like, who is this girl? Like, and then I saw him again inside the building, and I was like, this is just terrible because now you're gonna think that I'm stalking you. Like, and I went up to him and I apologized and I was like, listen, I'm so sorry. That was so weird. but like, you're great. Your book is great. Your writing is great. And yeah, that's how I met Caleb.
Nice to meet you, bye. You know, when you just wrap up the conversation all in one.
Genuinely.
Hi, nice to meet you. I love your work. Bye.
Yep. It was a drive-by, maybe.
Will you? All right. Well, a little bit of background on Caleb Azuma Nelson. He's a British Ghanaian writer and photographer. Hold that photographer thought in your head. His debut novel is
sounds
crazy.
Like Nobel, like novel and novel.
His debut novel, Open Water, was released in 2021. It received several awards and nominations, including awards from the Royal Society of Authors, which is the trade union for writers, illustrators, and literary translators in the UK. Bro, these R's are actually killing me over here. apparently, according to him, actually, I believe it was an interview maybe that he did. For this was published as part of Penguin, as part of Viking Books, which is an imprint of Penguin. So when it was first released, he basically explained that he started writing Open Water a year after his aunt, his godfather, and three of his grandparents passed away, which is pretty heavy. So in the midst of that grieving period is when he started writing it. And I'm going to kind of go first on like just general overview, my thoughts, and feel free to jump in whenever you want, Jessica. But I think the book is very character driven, and my kind of very simple like connecting of the dots is that because he started writing it when he was going through all that loss and grieving, I can imagine that it was probably quite easy to just channel what he was going through, like, quite directly into the book. So it almost becomes, like, autobiographical. So, for example, like, the main character who is the voice of the book, like, the male protagonist, he's a photographer as well. And I feel like, I think there's quite a lot of, obviously writers write from personal inspiration, but like, I feel like the blend with his life was maybe, I don't know, like maybe more than he was even realizing himself at the time, because I feel like also he wasn't thinking about the story. He was more so, because he was like probably channeling what was happening and what he was feeling at the time. He's writing about a person, which lends itself quite easily to being like quite character driven. I mean, like, that's probably his style as well. But like, I feel like you know, the coinciding of those events and him writing and developing his style, like, I don't know, it went hand in hand with it being quite like a character driven. There's no like plot per se. We're just like following this character in this snapshot of his life. Yeah, what else? It's written in second person narrative voice, which I feel like puts a little bit of distance between the story and the narrator, even though it's literally about his life.
I feel like it's so controversial. Like, the people that I know that didn't like the book, most of them didn't like it because it was in second person.
It is weird.
But I really liked it, and I feel like a lot of the time when I write, I naturally fall into second person.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think that... For me, I didn't feel distance.
Mm.
So I feel like maybe there's, like, two camps, like, the people for which it creates distance because you, like, you hear someone say, like, oh, you're walking into the shop, and you're like, no, I'm not. Like, I'm sitting here reading this book.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are people that are, like...
It puts you in a story.
Yeah, and I feel like it put me in the... And because he was talking about, like, black people's experiences as well as the characters' experiences and, like, the characters' experiences within that context...
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it kind of helped me to be like, yeah, like, you know, like, I have experienced stuff like this before. So maybe that's why I didn't feel too distant from it. But it was so controversial.
Yeah, I mean, the way the distance, I don't think the distance was a bad thing because I think, like you said, it gives, like, the ability to almost feel like commentary for me. I felt like it was like the distance gave perspective, almost like an objectivity in terms of when he was talking about broader concepts about like being black, especially being a black man in London specifically, and growing up and stuff like that. But I think also it gave, I don't know, I think a lot of the stuff that happens in the book is like quite traumatic for the character. So I think almost it was a way for the character to reflect without being so caught up in the like heat of the moment and in the emotion of it. I think it gives like almost like a reflective flashback esque feel to it. I don't know if that makes sense. Like, yeah, I don't know. The distance did, I don't think it was bad, but I think it was, I don't know, an interesting choice.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
When you read books or like when you read full stop, do you like hear a voice in your head or do you just like read the words and like process them without hearing like your internal monologue?
Sometimes both. I'm trying to remember what happened with Open Water. I think I heard his voice.
So I think for me, like when I'm reading, it's very much like my, it becomes like my internal monologue. So I feel like I'm like the you thing. It just sounds like me saying you to someone. Does that make sense? As opposed to them saying you to me.
So you become the character.
Almost. Yeah.
Yeah, that didn't happen for me. My thing was almost like, I feel like I was just watching him talk about these things that are happening. Yeah, I was just watching him. But it was in, it was, he was the narrator. It was his voice. But I was watching everything unfold.
I think
was
it's
definitely
like,
an audience member.
At times I felt like I was witnessing things, but I was definitely like I felt integrated. Like I didn't, I wouldn't say, I wouldn't go as far as saying I was the character, but I felt integrated.
In the story.
Yeah.
Interesting. I mean, yeah, I don't think it's a very common voice to write in.
It's not.
Person, so.
And it's for the reasons that, like, because people feel like...
Distance.
Yeah, it distances people. It's, like, very hard. Like, it's a bold move for a first novel to be like, I'm going to write in the second person.
I feel like... I'm just speculating at this point. But also, I feel like maybe to put distance between him writing it and the story that he was telling it, he needed to do that you... Do you know what I mean? I don't know, to give it a bit more breathing space. Do you know what I mean? I don't know. Sometimes when you're, it's like, I'm writing from a place of I, it becomes too, too like egocentric.
That's true.
But then if you're just like omniscient narrator, it's like too far.
Yeah, because you know, when we went to the Tate Late and we... like went into his Q&A session and there someone asked him a question about like kind of what his process is and how he like comes up with, I think it was something about like writer's block and overcoming writer's block. And he was talking about how he writes from a place of emotion. Yeah. It's like the thing that he has first. It's not really like character or plot that comes to him first.
Yeah.
It's like the emotion mm-hmm. and like the kind of emotional field that like he wants to put on the page. Mm-hmm. And then everything kind of just comes from that.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like the idea of like, you know, maybe I would have been too much, because if like, you know, the character's talking about some heavy things, yeah. like, you know, rejection being kind of like the main theme of the mm-hmm. novel in like various different ways. Like, if you're going through that and, you know, this is the summer after he lost, you know, a lot of loved ones. Mm. And then you put I into that.
Mm.
It sometimes you can just be like too close to the text yeah. and it like stops you from actually writing the story as it needs to be
yes.
told.
Yes.
So maybe you're right. Maybe that was his way of being like, this is how I know the story
mm-hmm.
needs to be told. And like, mm-hmm. this is like the story. I need to let this character take his own
yeah.
journey.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
the minute
yeah.
I put I on the page, it yeah. becomes a diary. Yeah. And then it's like, I'm talking about my experiences yes. with rejection.
Yeah, 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 yeah. So I'm not, at this point, I'm not writing the character, I'm just writing the diary.
Actually. Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? That's yeah. so interesting.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, Caleb, please come on the podcast then. Clarify.
Oh my gosh, I would literally cry. Invite me back for that episode. If he like actually still would want
would
to be on an
to.
Episode that I was on after I did that weird high thing.
You just like his stuff. I think he will appreciate the love.
Yeah, maybe. It would be like, oh gosh, a crazed fan.
Okay, so let's actually get into talking about the book in relation to the theme. I have some things to say, but I'll let you go first if there's anything on your heart.
On my heart.
Get out.
I think like the thing that really struck me when I read the book,
mm-hmm.
I can't remember when I read the book. It's probably like 2000 and...
2000? Oh, sorry.
No, I was saying like the long form, like 2021. Okay. Do you know what I mean? Like, okay, I wasn't going to be okay. like 2000.
No, because I thought you were going to say 2009.
No, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I know what you mean. I think I read it in 2021 or maybe 2022.
Okay.
But
I think it's 21.
I feel like it wasn't because yeah. I went to Seville.
Yeah, I thought you read it then.
No, I went to Seville in 2022, so I think I read it.
What?
Yeah, I went to Madrid in
2021. Oh, okay.
Wow, I'm just baiting myself out.
International.
Banging Spain, like. Anyways, yeah, so I think I read it.
Sorry.
I think I read it over, like, an extended time period. Sometime from, like, I don't even know, like, May or something, 2022, mm-hmm. to, like, kind of end of summer, like, well, my summer was really short, but it was, like, mm-hmm. July 2022 okay. or something like that. And that was intentional
mm-hmm.
because the book is only, like, 150 pages.
Yeah.
But from the moment I read it, I was like, I don't really think I've read somebody that writes like this
mm-hmm.
in a long time, if at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that I was like, I don't feel like I can let go of that this quickly. Like, so I was like actively like pacing myself to stop myself from finishing the book too quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the thing that strikes me about the book is it's like so emotionally intelligent.
Yeah.
It's like so aware of like the emotions that it's trying to like evoke
mm-hmm.
from the reader at like any given point. And it's mad because like, the thing that I love most about the novel is that he kind of soundtracks it.
Mm.
So, like, you're reading, like, these really long kind of, like, poetic, lyrical passages of text. And then, like, within it, there'll be, like, little references to, oh, and I was listening to this song or, mm-hmm. you know, in the summer that this loss happened
mm-hmm.
and all you listened to on the radio was mm-hmm. this by the Fugees or whatever. So it was, like, mm-hmm. very... It like the way that he integrated music and like lyricism was just like mm-hmm. crazy to me. And I was like, I could really see how he was influenced by Black writers that had come before him, like mm-hmm. Baldwin and,
mm-hmm.
you know, very just like famous, very talented Black writers,
mm-hmm.
Especially in like the way that he's so like lyrical.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that kind of that really deep integration of like music and even sometimes like film.
Mm-hmm.
Like sometimes he'd cut like film scenes mm-hmm. and like there was a real integration of just like all sides of kind of artistic expression, even though he's a writer,
mm-hmm.
which was really cool. Mm-hmm. And visually, you can tell by the way he writes the book. Mm-hmm. It's a very visual book. You can tell he's a photographer from the way that he mm-hmm. describes things. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You can tell that he, like, I feel like he writes things in terms of images. Mm-hmm. He's like, this is the image I have, yeah. and then here's what this I'm going to put on the page. But I've been waffling, sorry. That's not to do with rejection.
But, okay. Okay, cool. So, when it comes to rejection, I have 2 points. So, I'm going to talk about first, like, the title of the book, okay? So, it's a metaphor. And what I think the metaphor is for is, like, the open water is, like, the vulnerability of whatever it is you're experiencing, okay? So, in this book, there's love, there's... What else is there?
I think, like, so much of the book is, like, there's, like, the... love and, like, rejection mm-hmm. bit, like, personally. Mm-hmm. And then there's, like, love and rejection on, like, a societal level, mm-hmm. being, like, a Black person mm-hmm. and, like, inhabiting a space where, like, you're kind of constantly seeking love and acceptance mm-hmm. from, like, mm-hmm. a world that doesn't give that
yeah.
to you.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree. That's literally, like, what I was going to break down, like, that metaphor of open water is to express the vulnerability of either being yourself in a society that doesn't accept you and shows you multiple times. Like, he talks about it in the context of, like, going to school and then him being a Black boy and what that was like, and then interacting with the police, and then growing up just generally, like, you know, being around his area, going to the barbershop, da-da-da-da, all of these things. And just him constantly seeing how he, as a Black man, is rejected through the experiences, you know, all these other experiences that he sees and is, you know, surrounded by. And I think, like, he goes back and forth all the time. Like, there's a quote in the book that is... You ache all over, you are aching to be you, but you're scared of what it means to do so. And I think, like, there's a fear associated with being that vulnerable and actually, like, surrendering and being, like, accepting the fact that you are in the open water. So I feel like he goes back and forth between, oh, should I just free it, or should I just hold myself and keep everything in, kind of thing. And through his babes, I feel like he initially feels like he's got a space to be able to do that. And then he starts to explore the fact of, like, oh gosh, like, this is a really scary thing going into the open water, but it's okay, kind of thing. But then I feel like that fear is triggered again, and this is a slight spoiler. The character that dies is a character called Daniel. He's not a significant character, but another Black man, like the protagonist, and killed in, like, a very, like, callous, mindless way, like a hit and run. And I think that literally just triggers him to be like, rah, like, again, like,
it's almost like an existential crisis.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, my humanity is just, like, not seen, not accepted, not protected, not, like, nothing. And then he essentially not just rejects his babes, but rejects everyone. Like, he goes into a super depressive mode, very understandably, but, like, just rejects the world, rejects everything.
Yeah. I think it's interesting, like, what you're saying about... oh gosh, I literally have my sentence formed in my head. But when you're talking about Daniel, and when you're talking about, like, him just kind of seeing a lot of the way that, like, Black men and, like, Black people were treated and, like, rejected, mm-hmm. I think it's really interesting that he chose, like, that model to show this kind of, like, lack of, I guess, like, space, or, like, lack of, like, comfortability mm-hmm. in, like, the body that you inhabit. Because mm-hmm. I think, like, when things like, you know, like, police brutality, stop and searches, like, all the things that a lot of Black men experience mm-hmm. in, like, the UK and, like, the US, in the West, there's almost, like, an externalization. Even if you're not the man that that's happening to mm-hmm. or the Black person that that's happening to, mm-hmm. there's, like, it feels like that black person is an external representation of you as well. Mm-hmm. So when that happens to them, mm-hmm. it's also happening to you.
Yeah.
Like,
and,
so,
it, and I feel like the reality is very real that it can happen to
exactly.
you. Exactly. Do you know what I mean?
So I feel like it's very interesting because, like, for him, and I think because we have this kind of, like, stepwise progression through the novel of, like, seeing all of these kind of things, like, the everyday life of a black man,
mm-hmm.
and then we have, like, Daniel's death.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like, it makes sense why that would be, like, the trigger point,
mm-hmm.
because it's like, now I'm seeing a black man dying on the floor,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, this is me.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. I think it's a weird, like, to after that, he kind of goes through, like, an ego death. It's mm-hmm. like, nice that it's, well, not nice, but it's interesting to see that, like, it feels like Caleb has made that connection between, like, I've seen, like, this externalization of me die,
mm-hmm.
and now I'm kind of going through that same process mm-hmm. of, like, ego death and, like, mm-hmm. trying to, like, grieving him, but also grieving mm-hmm. myself.
Yes, yes, yes. Agreed, agreed. 100%. And I feel like the way that he initially deals with that grief is by, as I said, just literally disappearing, ghosting her. And I feel like because the Daniel's death, I think, intersects with when he starts to realize just how deep his feelings are for the girl and, like, just how he really is in that open water. Like, he almost, like, comes to his senses that he's like, rah, like, I'm like, just out in the open. So, like, susceptible, you know?
Susceptible.
How was that? Susceptible.
Susceptible
to the elements, and literally just anything can come at me. That he was like, rah, like, I cannot be here. Like, this cannot be, like, this cannot be where I am. And then on top of that, like, Daniel dies and he's like, rah, like, I am not safe. I need to retreat. And, I think a really, like, kind of good quote that illustrates this is, so it says, what you're trying to say is that it's easier for you to hide in your own darkness than emerge cloaked in your own vulnerability. Not better, but easier. However, the longer you hold it in, the more likely you are to suffocate. At some point, you must breathe. And I think it's like, you know that thing of, you know what you should be doing and shouldn't be doing, but there's also what you need to do. I feel like he needs that moment of retreat, because sometimes doing the right thing, quote unquote, sometimes, and doing the healthy thing, if you like, is hard, because he knows that he should be talking to people, he should be, or maybe in his mind, the healthy way to process his grief is to be talking to people, not to just literally just cut everyone off and disappear, because obviously you have a responsibility to make sure that people know that you're all right.
And
not disappear.
It's also hard because when you're like, when you're trying to, like, vocalize to someone, like, hey, like, I'm black, you're black, and, like, the pressure of being in this body right now, like, yeah. being this black person is too much. It's yeah. kind of like, how am I saying that to you?
Yeah.
So I feel like they're almost, though there's a shared experience, it's almost like, because it's so shared, it's almost like you're preaching to the choir, like, it's hard for me too.
Yeah.
So I think there's almost that fear of rejection in that way, because yeah. it's like, well, there's some people that are going to say, you know, I'm dealing with it this way.
Yeah.
So why can't you just deal with it?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that there's almost like that fear there of, like,
yeah, to open up then.
When you've when you've already been accepted on, like, one plane,
mm-hmm.
to get to that deeper level of acceptance,
mm-hmm.
because it's like, we already have this community, like, we love each other, we're black, and we see each other.
Mm-hmm.
But then asking for that, like, extra level of acceptance is mm-hmm. almost like, mm-hmm. that's where, like, the fear is, because it's like, I've already gained this, mm-hmm. and if I lose this, I lose both.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. And that literally, yeah, he literally just keeps everything in at that point, because he's just, I think the fear just cripples him, to be honest with you. Like, yeah. But then, okay, so we have this event that triggers that fear. He retreats, rejects everyone, and at the end of the book, though, there's, you know, some hope, some light at the end of the tunnel. So I want to read this last quote. So the quote is, you have always thought Why can I not read today? You have always thought if you opened your mouth in open water, you would drown. But if you didn't open your mouth, you would suffocate. So here you are, drowning. And this happens when he finally is like, okay, I'm going to open up and tell this girl what happened and why I disappeared. And I think you don't really know how she reacts. And I think that's a good... I don't know. I think I'm not mad at that. The fact that you don't know how everything ends and it's not happily ever after. But I think the fact that you see him go through this journey where he is really going through it. And then at the end, you see him finally be like, okay, he's kind of reconciled within himself that this has happened. I'm going through this. And he's kind of collected maybe not all of his thoughts, but some of his thoughts. And he's ready to share that. I think that's not, that's, I don't know, the beginning of a healing journey is what it feels like to me. And I don't know, the way that I looked at it, this is my analysis of it, was that he essentially accepts that the death is inevitable, right? So you're in this open water. You cannot escape from the vulnerability of the situation, whether that's either him being with his babes and them being in love or just, you know, living as a black person, specifically a black man in society, right? So it's like, you got to accept that, right? If you speak, at least you're calling out to whoever's also in the open water, is the way that I thought about it. Because if you stay quiet, right, if you hold everything in, keep everything to yourself, like it's almost like a perceived solitude, like a like a false solitude that you're going through. It's like, rah, like, it's just me going through this, da 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 da. And then you end up boxing yourself up and then you die because you're suffocating with all the things that are just building and building and building inside of you. Whereas if you open your mouth, yes, there is the risk of drowning because what if you open your mouth and nobody's there? But to tap into the support that could be there, and for you to, if we keep with the metaphor, for you to maybe support each other, somebody's holding somebody's legs while if they're tight, do you get what I mean? Like if you're leaning on each other's arms, like you're floating together, because I don't know, whatever it is, if you don't open your mouth to say something, like the other person's not going to know that you're there. And I feel like that's like the first step in, you know, reaching out for that support and for that. Yeah, and for her as well. Like, obviously, we don't know how it goes, but I thought that was a nice, I don't know, it was a nice insight into, like, the beginning of, like, a healing process.
Well, I think, I'm not sure if this is a new point or a follow-on point, because mm-hmm. it's just, like, everything's so integrated. Mm-hmm. But the thing that, like, I think just, like, strikes me the most about the novel is how much it is just about, like, feeling seen.
Mm.
And how much of a need it is. It's not like a frivolous one, it's a need.
Mm-hmm.
And how that, like, need to feel seen, and I guess, like, the possibility of being felt truly seen by somebody mm-hmm. is both, like, scary
mm-hmm.
and I guess, like, not constructive, like, I want to say, like, uplifting.
Support.
Yeah, like, I wanted to say, like not reconstructive, but, like, constructive. Like, what? But, yeah, like, it's very, like, but it's, like, deeper than uplifting, but uplifting yeah. is kind of the only word I can think of right now.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think that, like, the whole novel is just kind of him just tackling with, you know, going into this open water. Like, if by walking into this open water, you are asking to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to ask to be seen, you have to lay yourself at the table. You have to put yourself in this, like, state yeah. of vulnerability. Obviously, the open water, you know, mm-hmm. you're not in a swimming pool.
Mm-hmm.
There's
no edge.
Do you know what I mean? There are no floaties
there's
here.
No
like
ground.
Do you mean? There's no lifeguard. It's just you and literally. The beach.
And the tides and the currents.
Yeah, so, like, you are putting yourself in this position of vulnerability, but in order to be seen, you must step out into that open water and everything that it comes with.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, like, fear of, like, being tender and being vulnerable is just something that he deals with so well. And I think that injecting, like, a personal relationship, because he could have just made it a novel about this one guy, this one mm-hmm. black man just going through kind of like a thought journey.
Mm-hmm.
And we could have just seen, you know, all of the social interactions he has with like various people in his
mm-hmm,
life.
Mm-hmm.
We like the romance never needed to be injected
mm-hmm.
into it
mm-hmm.
Because really, like you said, it's like really character driven. So it mm-hmm. is really about the evolution of one character.
Mm-hmm.
But I think by like introducing that idea of love,
mm-hmm.
I think it also introduces the idea of, I think sometimes people are scared of rejection, not just because it hurts, but because they're afraid that it will confirm that they were never worthy of the thing that they mm-hmm. wanted in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And in something as deep as love, and with the topic of a black man seeking love mm-hmm. and like care for someone
mm-hmm.
in a world where that is so rarely given,
mm-hmm.
and you like see that contrasted by the outside world, you know, mm-hmm. you see Stop and Searches, you see police brutality, you see that, you know, Daniel,
schools and stuff like that, yeah.
stuff like that, and you see Isolation. It's like you're told time and time again that this is something that's not realistic mm-hmm. for you,
mm-hmm.
at least on a societal level. So mm-hmm. then to take that to a personal level and see him kind of internalize the way he's seen
mm-hmm.
or he's being seen and perceived by society
mm-hmm.
and then say like, hey, like, is it okay for me to be loved by you and mm-hmm. to love you?
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean for me?
Mm-hmm.
I think that, and like have him like almost withdraw the moment that he's like about to actualize that.
Yeah.
I think it's like just a really interesting commentary on like what really is the nature of like rejection and mm-hmm. like what is like the root of like a fear of rejection. Mm-hmm. It's like the lack of that, like fear of not being worthy for the thing yeah, in the first
yeah,
place.
Yeah, yeah.
So why even bother kind
yeah,
of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly that. Exactly that. It's essentially not just getting in front of the pain, but getting in front of like, you might think, yeah, like, I am not worth, I'm not worthy of this love and this care. You can think it, but like, before it actually happens and it is a reality, because right now it's just in your head. So, like, you can maybe convince yourself that, like, it's probably true, but maybe it's not true. There's still that chance, but until it actually happens, it's not a reality. So, like, he tries to get in front of that. And obviously, you get in front of the, it hurts being rejected, whatever, but yeah. Oh man, I really like this book. Yeah. I really like this book.
My
so.
Favorite thing I want to say. Sorry, I feel like we're on. About to like wrap up,
yeah.
but my favorite thing to say from the novel is there's like a recurring like refrain,
mm-hmm.
and it's what is a joint, what is a fracture, what is a break, and that like goes on throughout the novel in like different kind of iterations. So he changes it based on like what the situation is mm-hmm, at the
mm-hmm,
time.
Mm-hmm.
But I just love that.
Whether this is a fracture, which is whether this is a break.
Yeah. And just like kind of, it was just really interesting to me because I was like, oh, it's just such a cool refrain to have when like connection is just like such a big theme in the novel.
Mm-hmm.
And then like kind of questioning, like, what does it mean to be apart from someone, to be like at the point of breaking with someone,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
At the point of union with someone, mm-hmm. like what do all of those things mean? So that's my last thing to say.
Yeah. And I feel like that even applies to him, like the breaking and rejoining and healing process of like just him internally as well.
Like, so true.
Do you know what I mean?
So true.
Like, yeah. Anyway, we could talk for hours, but...
We really could.
We got to move on to soundtrack and stories in this B. Okay, so soundtrack and stories is my gift to you guys. Something for you guys to engage with outside of these wonderful and amazing and tantalizing episodes.
Tantalizing.
So Soundtrack and Stories is a playlist that is going to be updated with every single episode. I'm going to be adding 5 songs related to the theme of every episode, and I will reveal those 5 songs at the end, just like I'm about to do right now. Okay, so let's get into the songs. First up, we have So Be It by Alex Vaughan. Okay, so all of these songs are connected to the theme, which is rejection. It's not you. It's not me, it's you. I got confused for a second. It's not me, it's you.
Wait, is it based on the normal? Have you changed the normal phrase?
Yeah.
Okay, then it's not me, it's you.
No, it's not you, it's me.
It's not you, it's me is a normal phrase.
Oh yeah.
So it's
yeah,
not
sorry,
me,
yeah.
It's
so
because
I'm yeah from the perspective of the rejector. Anyway, let's start again. All right, so first up we have So Be It by Alex Vaughn. Alex Vaughn is a singer and songwriter, R&B singer and songwriter from Maryland, DMV. I don't know why, I've always just wanted to say from the DMV. It's so random, but DMV is District of Columbia, Maryland, and Virginia in the US. Which, I don't know if you guys picked up on the accent on Jessica's voice, but, you know.
It was so soft today. I don't think, like, I think I sound, like, just very British today.
I don't know. I feel like, anyway, you let us know. Use hashtag SWPodUK. Let us know if Jessica sounds, what percentage Jessica sounds UK and American.
This is, like, I was born in America, and I was
born
brought
and
up
raised,
in America.
Actually,
yeah,
to a point.
So that's, like, that's why
it's
we're asking
nowhere.
This question.
She's not just, like,
I'm
a
not
weirdo,
just, a, yeah, I'm not an actress. Obsessed. Oh, I'm not an actor.
Fairs.
Only when I want to be.
Well, all right. So Be It by Alex Vaughn. There's a remix, by the way, of this song, which it has Summer Walker on it. And yeah, so the song, the lyric from the song that I want to hone in on and focus on is, I say that I don't miss you, but I do. Say that I don't care. That's not the truth. Okay. So clearly Alex is in denial about dealing with this rejection. Okay. And she actually says there's a version of her album, sorry, her EP, The Hurt Book, which has voice notes basically explaining the meaning behind each song. And for So Be It, it's about rejection from a friend, actually, and her dealing with that and going through that. So clearly, at this stage, Alex was in denial about missing her friend and caring about her friend still in the midst of that rejection. Next song is Far by SZA, one of my favorite artists. She was definitely in my Wrapped last year, so I bang out SZA all the time. I feel like we all know who SZA is, but in case you don't, you know, I Hate You, The Weeknd, Snooze, these are all songs from her discography. Discography strong. But she is, again, singer-songwriter. I would say she's like, her earlier stuff is a bit different, but now I feel like she's more like R&B pop, R&B pop. Would you agree? I feel like she does a range of genres, but like that's kind of...
I feel like it's really difficult to... I feel like...
To pigeonhole SZA.
Yeah, I feel like R&B is probably like the overarching genre, and then she kind of does what she wants within that.
Because Nobody Gets Me is like... Nobody is like very indie...
You. What's that song? She has Phoebe Bridgers on one of her songs.
Yes, yeah, she does.
Yeah, and that's definitely like decidedly Phoebe Bridgers is an indie, indie babe.
And even and also she always even in Control, there's Prom, which is it's not indie, but Prom is like very
is
like
the one that's like feeling pop, like growing up.
Yeah, it's very like pop girly.
It is very like Carly Rae Jepsen.
Yes,
like
yeah,
if a different person sang it, it would definitely be in the pop.
Yeah, 100%. So I feel like she's multi-genre. Let's just say that because let's put respect on SZA's name. Anyway, so the lyric from the song is "Done being used." Why did I half sing it, half say it?
You sound a bit Canadian. Done being used.
I know. That sounded so funny. But it's done being used, done playing stupid, done faking cool, done being screwed, done feeling clueless. Okay?
You just have a little bit of a Canadian accent going on when you do those.
I know. It's because it's because it's because I'm like trying to say it in like kind of the melody of the song, but I'm not trying to sing
screwed.
It. But yeah, so... Basically, in this song, rejection has finally made SZA pattern up, okay? It strengthened her to stay true to her boundaries. Boundaries? And what's going on with my speech? I
honestly,
think I'm just tired.
It's giving Drake. Drake?
Boundaries. Stay true to her boundaries and literally just stand on business. Like, she's done at this point, basically. She's not having it anymore. She's not having none of it, all right? And then the next one is a song by a Tanzanian artist. Her name is Hani Pendi. Oh, bro, my brain is just confuzzled. Her name is Yami. The song's name is Hani Pendi, which means he doesn't love me or they don't love me. So this is my Tanzanian sis. There's not a lot of info about her on the internet. People are saying she's born in 2000. People are saying she's born in 2004. Who knows? People don't even know where she's from.
Mysterious.
People are saying she's basically like, she online it says she's either from somewhere called Mwanza or she's from somewhere called Tanga. Like, one of them is like by the East Coast, like by the Indian Ocean. The other one is like on the other side, on the west, by like Lake Victoria. It's like,
I would love to be that mysterious 2000 artist. She
honestly, I don't know. I think it's just like people be hiding their government details in Tanzania.
Yeah, and also like her name, like she hasn't put like a government name there either.
Yeah, nah. So yeah, I've looked online and there's like two people are like, yeah, this is her name, and then somebody brought a whole different name, and I was like, okay, well, I'm not gonna include
this
that.
This is great because now she's gonna get like a cult following because everyone's gonna be like, who is she? We want to know who she is. Like, has anyone uncovered the mystery?
I'm gonna put you lot on Yami, bruv. But yeah, like it's the equivalent of like saying like she's from Essex or she's from Wales. Like nobody knows.
To be fair,
like it's two different.
If you had said like she's from the Valleys or she's from Essex, I would have been like Ferris.
I mean, it's just the distance. Like, that those two are very.
I know.
Yeah.
But I'm like, if someone was like from the Valleys and they're from Essex, I'd be like, you guys probably have some similarities.
Fez. But, okay, so from this song, the lyric is, I'm going to say it in Swahili first. And then I'm going to say it the English translation. So she basically says, the chorus is, Hani pendi, hani pendi, hani pendi. So he repeats it three times. He doesn't love me, he doesn't love me, he doesn't love me. Hani taki tena, yamani hani pendi. Which means, he doesn't want me again. That is such an aff translation. He doesn't want me anymore. Like, oh my goodness, he doesn't love me. Okay? So she, a baby's shocked, I think. I think a baby's shocked. And the more shocking thing is that the first verse, I'm just going to do the English translation this time. In the first verse, she opens up and she says, the way that you're doing me dirty, I pray the same thing doesn't happen to you. Meaning, I love you, but I saw her, you posted your babes, you two go together real bad, but me, I'm not your type. So I think from what I'm gathering from this song, basically, Yami is given side chick.
Oh, gosh.
He's given side chick. She discovers he has an actual girlfriend. He posts her. And she's like, not only am I the side chick, but actually, you two actually suit each other really well.
Can you imagine?
I clearly am not your type. And you know that conversation that is just like, is it better for like your ex to move on to somebody who's like
longer than
like you? No, like looks like you or like completely different.
How do you feel about that? Because like
I'm still undecided. Don't move on from me. That's really the moral of the story.
Yeah, but like if they had to,
because
if my man moves on with a completely different type, I'd be like, was I the last?
That's what I'm saying.
Was I the last straw? Like,
that's what I'm saying to you.
I would anger me. Actually.
I think, do I want to be your type? Yeah, no.
As in like, I don't care if I'm your type. As long as like, I'm your type. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because if you never dated someone like me before and then you meet me and you're like, you changed my life.
If it's given assorted meat.
As in if they have like lots of different exes from all different.
Yeah.
Yeah, then that's fine because then they don't really have a type.
Yeah.
But if they have, say like your ex was just like into like, I don't know why I said your ex, your ex. Say your ex was just into like, I don't know, like white blonde girls. Yeah. So very, very different.
Yeah.
And all of, he had like three exes maybe. Mm-hmm. And they were all white blonde women with like straight hair.
Yeah. Because the curly be confused.
Do you see what I'm saying?
I'm joking.
And then he dates you, black woman, locks.
Yeah.
And then right after that, he goes back to the white blonde. Hey. How would you feel about that?
God, was I social experiment?
Oh, 565 experiment.
Is given experiment.
Yeah, wow.
Experimental distance.
That is so. Yeah, yeah. Wow.
So
at least after me, like, I feel like you owe your ex the courtesy to date someone that looks like them.
Yes.
Right after you've, just to be like, hey, like, I miss you so bad. And then, like, you can go back. Then he can go to his, like, white blonde girl with straight hair if that's truly his type. But
honestly,
like,
if you're, listen, PSA.
PSA.
If your exes do not look like me and I'm clearly not your type, okay? And you have your type isn't coming like assorted meat. It's coming like straight lamb, beef, chicken, fish, whatever. Okay?
What was that analogy? Straight lamb, beef, chicken, fish.
Yeah. If every single time before me you've dated lamb, and you're trying to, I don't know what I am, maybe chicken.
Why would you make yourself chicken?
I don't know, I like chicken.
Of all the meats, just the one that everyone buys.
If I'm chicken, then don't move to me. Go and move to more lamb.
I wouldn't go that far.
No, with respect.
The heart wants what it wants. If you want me, that's okay. But, like, make sure that this is truly, like, you want me. And it's not just like, oh, I haven't tried this before.
The only way I accept it if I'm badder than, I mean, obviously, if I'm badder than the rest.
Yeah, but
if,
like,
I'm the
that's
exception
subjective.
And I'm, subjective, but like, if I think I'm
badder. It's all about me. You know what I mean? No, but you know when you're at a restaurant and like your friend, you're like, oh, I really want to try this, and like, say you usually get like the beef patty, you're like, oh, you know, I really want to try the saltfish patty, and you're like, but I know the beef patty's nice and it tastes good, but sometimes you get that saltfish patty because you're like, actually, no, like, I know I'm gonna enjoy this because I like saltfish, I like the pastry from this company already, and my friend went last week and they said that they like the saltfish. Like, no, but sometimes you know you're doing it based on research.
Sorry, this is killing me. You know when guys get cooked online for like, stop comparing us to drinks and stop comparing us to
things. This is so true.
And we just put ourselves in a whole food metaphor.
But anyway,
let me wrap this up quickly. I've got two more songs. So the next one is So My Darling by Rachel Chinariri. Acoustic version, very important. Rachel Chinariri is a London Zim girlie, as in Zimbabwe, if you don't know what Zim is, sorry for you. But she's a multi-genre, again, singer-songwriter. I feel like her discography is mainly like...
It's indie.
Indie.
And she gets mad when people try to say R&B because she's not an R&B babe.
Like, I feel like indie, sometimes indie pop.
Yeah, definitely indie pop, like, sometimes more pop rock.
Yeah.
But she's definitely, they just try to say she's R&B because she's black.
Yeah, she's definitely not R&B, 100% not. And then basically the line from this song is just, remember, I'll always love you. And the song is actually, Jessica, do you want to say what the song is inspired by?
I'm a big Rachel Chinariri fan. Went to one of her concerts maybe like a year or 2 years ago, and she was talking about the song and how actually she used to fancy one of her best friends called Marcus, who she actually, that's like the opening line of the song.
Kiss.
Yeah. But yeah, she really fancied Marcus. He didn't fancy her back, but they still just stayed friends and just have like a great friendship. I think they might even still be friends to this day. But yeah, she just wanted to write him a song to kind of express just, you know, like how much she cared for him. Even though they weren't like going to be together or anything like that. Like this was after, I think, he was like, girl, I don't want
girl,
to
no.
do that. Yeah. I think he was like a little bit less. He was like, sorry, girl, respectfully. No. So this song is kind of about, I guess it's kind of about, it might be about unrequited love.
Yeah. But I feel like exactly it's like romantic rejection, but from a friend.
Yeah, romantic.
Which is like,
very
specific, but like, I feel like more common than we think.
Unrequited love. That's Frank Ocean. He sang about it too.
Well, people be singing about unrequited loves. I sang about unrequited love, but let's not get into that. Okay, so the lyric from the song is, remember, I'll always love you, which I think is very sweet because, like, yes, once upon a time, I thought maybe there was a romantic twinge to this, but, like, ultimately, she does just love him. And, I think it's, like, acceptance. I think that's, like, the vibe of the song. Just acceptance. This is not going to happen, but it happened.
It's such a beautiful song to write, and especially when she said the context, I was like, oh.
Yeah, that's a bit okay. of fun.
But then I listened to it and I was like, wow.
Yeah.
That's just such a profound level of friendship. And that's, yeah, it's beautiful to see after rejection, there can still be love in a different
that's
way.
That's high emotional intelligence.
For real.
Okay, so up next we have Let Me Go by Daniel Caesar. Daniel Caesar is a Canadian singer-songwriter, a global superstar. He low-key got cancelled for a little bit, but I can't really even remember why. But yeah, we'll move on. I think he's fine now. He kind of gives similar vibes to Frank Ocean in the sense that he's like a pained artist. Like, that's like the vibe that I'm getting from him. Like, what do you think?
Like, troubled.
Yeah, like there's just something like Dominic Fike kind of gives the same, but he actually
Dominic Fike is troubled. Like
I don't know, like what Daniel Caesar.
No, like Daniel Caesar is just like heartbroken.
Yeah, yeah.
Even then, I don't think he's actually like heartbroken. Obviously, I can't speak I can't speak to his experience, but he doesn't give like actually heartbroken.
He just gives like empathetic.
Yeah, even like in his songs, I'm like, these aren't real women that you're talking about. Like. What was that song when he's like, I might fly Priscilla out just for Vanna.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I can't remember what it's called.
It's on Freudian, I think.
Is it?
I can't remember what it's called. I think so.
I thought it was on the, what's it called? That new one. Well, it's new now.
What,
but
the blue cover?
Or maybe it was just like a separate single.
Might be. Let's pause. Anyway, sorry, the whole track is him. Who hurt you?
I didn't realize that song was literally just him talking about his encounter with a stripper.
Yeah.
And I just like, that furthers my point that man is not like, that man is not ever hurt in his songs. He's not heartbroken. Like, this guy is literally just here for a good time, because the whole song, he's just like, I might fly her out. I just smack her ass around because it's just so nice. Like, as in, like, this man, like, and then the song's called Who Hurt You? And I'm like, are you talking about Priscilla? Because, like, Priscilla's actually calm. Like, she's spending just your coin. Like,
she's just tricking niggas. Like, it's
fine. You know what I mean? You're a trick. And, like, Priscilla's actually having the time of her life. Like,
it's too funny. But, yeah, apparently there's vocal contributions from T-Pain, which makes sense. Because they were saying on, what's that site? Genius. That obviously T-Pain has a song about a stripper as well.
Does he?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm in love with a stripper. Is that?
No. I was about to sing Bartender, whatever that song is. How does that song go?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
He has two songs. Bartender. There's a song with like bartender in it.
That's a very different profession.
Yeah, but I feel like it's something to do with the strip club. Like, both of them are, like, to do with either the club or strip club. Like, one of them is, the bar. Anyway, let's pause and research again.
I would love
to
do
that. Okay,
so
we're back.
Oh, sorry.
So we're back and we researched it. And, yeah, he has three songs. I was mixing all of them.
What's the third?
I'm in love with the strip of, what is it? Buy You a Drink.
Oh, let me buy you a drink.
Oh, oh.
Wow, that man really just loves going out. Like,
to the club or the strip club.
I think that was the way in like the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah. And like, he's from Florida apparently, but like I feel like he made his music in Atlanta. That just,
Florida makes so much sense. Like, so much sense to me.
What's he paying?
So much sense. I don't know why. Like, when you said it, it just clicked. Like, I was like,
Low key.
Like, there's a lot of artists that make sense. Like, Ariana Grande, low-key, I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, you're from
Florida. But, like, she's from, like, bougie. She's from, like, Boca Raton, which is, like, very, like, middle class. Like, she's from bougie Florida.
I see that, though.
That's what I'm saying. I see it very, but, like, she's, like, a brand of, like, you know, crazy that's, like,
from Florida.
Yeah, because, like, the way that she committed to Glinda from Wicked, I'm like, listen, I respect it. I watched the movie. I had a great time. She was amazing. But I'm like, this level of craziness, like, this suits.
Mm.
It suits. This commitment.
You're tapping into something innate.
Do you see? And Dominic Fike.
He's from Florida.
The way he writes songs.
I thought he was from L.A.
No, he's from Florida. That guy could never be from L.A.
He's
too real.
From the West Coast, like, But like, where's the poor part? Why did I want to say the Bronx? That's just wrong.
The Bronx is just,
that's just wrong.
I mean, there's loads of poor place. I mean, do you mean in, are you talking Inglewood. About specifically in California?
Like, yeah, I thought it was from like Inglewood.
Or like, okay.
That's not far from LA, but like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. But he's from Florida.
Oh my God, there was...
Where is he from in Florida?
I have a story time about Inglewood. One time, I went on this trip with my tennis team and they booked a hostel. A hostel in Inglewood, and it was...
I didn't know it was in Inglewood. It was in Inglewood. Okay.
Yeah, like, we literally drove past... sorry, not drove past. The hostel was a trap house. Like, they were actually shot in it. Like, that was the HQ. Do you know what I mean? Like, that was their... what do they call the setup? That was the their base? Operation. That was the operation. Like, honestly,
operational headquarters. And
yeah, like, we had to leave that place.
Well, that was a place where you saw the needle.
No, that was a different place. That was in a travel lodge in where's that place where Coachella is, in the desert.
That's so interesting. I've always just seen it as like it's in Coachella. Do you know what I mean? Like, I never, like,
Santa Monica? There's also a tennis tournament there. Anyway.
But Santa Monica isn't desert, it's beach.
No, it's not Santa Monica. That's wrong.
Okay.
Let me set it up.
No, it's fine. It's fine. We don't need to know.
Anyway, if you guys know where Coachella is / where that tennis tournament is, make sure you # SWPodUK. Make sure you # SWPodUK to see if you got it right. Mmm. It is cool.
What?
It is in Coachella Valley. But
yeah. Okay. Valley. I'm so proud of myself.
Wait, sorry.
I have an American citizenship. I was born there. So this means a lot to me. I also live there. Like, I wasn't just born there. I wasn't just like, let me get my passport and cut. That was my home. Shout out to Houston.
H-Town.
Still is my home to this day. But I'm just waiting for Donald Trump to...
he's going to be there for a while.
To just...
Palm Springs!
Palm Springs. Yeah. Oh, Spring Breakers. Spring Break. Spring.
If you got that right, make sure you #...
Shut up. Oh my
gosh. All right. We've been talking about this Let Me Go track for too long. You know you need to leave.
I don't need to leave. You just need to wrap up.
Okay, so now that we went on a whole tangent about Daniel Caesar and T-Pain and a lot of things and Coachella, let's bring it back to Let Me Go, Daniel Caesar. So, Let Me Go is off his third studio album. And what is that studio album called? It's got a blue cover.
Is it the Case Study one?
No. It's the newest one.
Oh, I know. I'm going to be real. After Freudian, I didn't listen to him. Like, I listened to a bit of Case Study.
Oh one,
yeah, but like I didn't.
It is off the album Never Enough. Okay. It's got a blue cover. And I'm just gonna read out the lyrics because this is really what brings it in with the whole rejection theme. But it's actually a little bit of like, usually we're hearing from the rejectee, the rejected. This time we're hearing from the rejecter. So the lyrics go, I'm trying to leave. Why won't you let me? I'm trying to breathe. Please just forget me. And I just think it's actually quite hilarious that this guy was just being suffocated by whoever he's in this relationship with. And my man just literally wants to be left in the past. Like, he wants to be free Daniel, basically. That's what it's given. So I thought, like, it was good to add this to the selection of thongs. Songs. Because... yeah, I want to hear from the rejectors. Like, clearly this one is heartless and has no sympathy. And it's given, like, you know when people start misbehaving in the relationship so that you can break up with them? Like, it's a little bit of a pussy move. Do you know what I mean? Like, he doesn't want to do it and stand on business and be like, you know what? I'm rejecting you. Lock off this relationship.
To be fair, though, listen, I'm not going to fight his corner. Mm. And I just realized what album we're talking about. Searched up on my phone and I have listened to this album.
Okay.
Not all of it. But this, like, these lyrics are pretty heavy. You know when you really love someone, but you also know that they love you so much? And, like, you know those relationships where, like, somebody, like, the other person is basically, like, one person's whole life? In my head, I'm like, is this what's going on with him here? Obviously, I do not know anything about Daniel, but in my head, I'm like, is this what's happening here? Because it's really, if someone's your whole life, you can be like, listen, I love you, but I need to leave. But now it's like, I know that, like, you're just never going to get over this.
Yeah, but, like we said, because I don't actually think Daniel, like, yeah, maybe you're right, actually. Because it's like, the way he sings it is kind of like he doesn't want to do it. He is sad about it, but maybe that's why he's not actually being proactive.
Yeah. In breaking up. But that's not an excuse for the men that decide. Everyone still, even Daniel in the song, I'm not a Daniel Caesar behavior excuser apologist. We heard who hurt you.
Yeah.
We know you would chopping it up with Priscilla. So, like, if you can have fun and kiki with Priscilla on a crazy night in Atlanta, then you can get up the balls and the cojones to go to this girl and be like, I don't want to be with you anymore.
Yeah.
Like, it's just the kind of thing to do.
Yeah.
In every
Daniel scenario. Feels like the guy who would, like, not actually have a conversation with you, but he'll write the song and he'll be like, oh, like, I want to show you something.
For real.
And he would actually want feedback. Do you know what I mean? Like, he wouldn't. He would be doing it to facilitate the breakup, but also he'd be like, but did you like it though?
That's so. You know what? I watched a TV show or a movie that was insanely similar to this, where it was like this guy and this girl, and they were both songwriters and they both lived in New York.
Oh my gosh, that's an old movie.
Yeah, it was with Hugh.
It's got, like, Drew Barrymore in it?
No, that's Music and Lyrics. I'm not talking about Music and Lyrics. It's very similar to Music and Lyrics kind of vibe, though. The two, like, main actors were kind of unknown. I don't know what career they've gone on to have, but they probably have. I'm just not that great identifying actors because it was also years ago. But what's the name of the guy that's the Hulk?
Mark Ruffalo.
So Mark Ruffalo was in this movie and he plays this kind of, like, it's like a mixture of, like, Music and Lyrics and Jerry Maguire.
I think we watched this together. I don't know what Jerry Maguire is.
Jerry Maguire is, like, it's this thing with Tom Cruise. No, it's a movie with Tom Cruise and he's like the sports agent. Yeah, and then he gets.
I think I watched all these films with you.
No, I watched Jerry Maguire, like, by myself, like, ages ago. Then the movie that I'm talking about, I think I watched with Lucy, actually.
I think I was there.
No, just when I was at Lucy's house for, like, the weekend.
And the reason why I'm saying it, because I don't. Like, these types of movies, I wouldn't, like, organically go and watch it. That's what I'm thinking. Like,
no, but maybe you need to give yourself more credit.
No.
Because, like, also, like, Jerry Maguire, like, I
think it was on E4.
Yeah, that would be an E4 movie. And then, like, this Mark Ruffalo movie, I'm actually not sure because
I definitely watched that with you.
You didn't. I watched it so recently and it was at Lucy's house. I haven't watched it since.
Maybe it was with Lucy.
What, as in you guys watched it again? Yeah.
No, as in I watched it with Lucy. It wasn't me. It definitely wasn't, like, organic.
I think you need to give yourself more credit because I literally watched this end of October.
Anyways,
this movie, can't remember what it's called, but Mark Ruffalo and then these two singer-songwriters who moved to New York and are trying to pursue music. Oh my gosh, no, it was, do you know what's so funny? I said that the actors were, like, oblivious. Keira Knightley.
She said, I don't know what kind of career they went on to have, but, like,
oh my gosh, no, I really think it was, yeah, it was Keira Knightley. I remember because I was like, Keira Knightley's not, like, she's not a singer. Being like, that's not her forte.
We're going to get it kicked out.
But anyways, this movie, I can't remember why I was telling the story.
Him showing the song to break up with the girl.
Okay, so like basically in the movie, the boy of the relationship goes on to be like this famous singer, and he starts reaching his like fame. Whereas like the girl, they've always like written songs together, but like for some reason, like he tries to bring her on when he gets signed and be like, oh no, we write songs together, but they just kind of ignore her. Mm-hmm. And he goes on to have like this really cool career, and like he cheats on her, and it's really sad. But then like when he comes back from like this business trip to the flat that they live in together, he plays a song, and then she like turns off the song and she's like, you cheated on me, didn't you? And it's because she could like tell from the song. And then she's like, who was it? Blah, blah, blah. Oh, and then like, it's just, it's like the peak of scene of the movie. And then she writes him a song, but she like sends it to him over voicemail. And is basically just saying like, screw you. Like, it's so bad. Great movie though. So sad that it took me so long to piece together the plot of the movie.
Oh gosh. But yeah, so that's Let Me Go, Daniel Caesar. Then we got, last one is Far by SZA, one of my favorite artists. And basically, at the beginning of the song, she has, you hear like a voice recording of her talking to this guy called Shad Guru. He's basically like a spiritual leader. He's a guru that operates something called an ashram, which is like a monastery slash like yoga center, like for like spiritual retreats and stuff. And she's basically asking him for advice on how to deal with rejection. And I think that kind of like sets the tone really nicely for the rest of the song. And it like, you can hear like kind of they're in like a, like, I don't know, like some sort of like nature setting, because you can hear like birds and like the wind and breeze and stuff. And the rest of the song is about wanting to be like far from people and like remove yourself from situations. And I feel like the ambience of that conversation, and obviously the content as well, matches with the song. But yeah, that's what I wanted to say on that. Okay, so those are the five songs for this episode. To find the playlist, you can click the link in the episode description. You'll be able to save it onto your Spotify, and then you won't have to search for every single time an episode drops. We'll just keep updating the songs automatically. And that just leaves me to wrap it all up. Thank you so much for listening. You have been listening to SW Pod Sounds and Stories. You can search that up on all podcasting platforms. Search up SW Pod Sounds and Stories. Follow us on socials to keep up with all things SW Pod. That's at SW Pod UK on Instagram, TikTok, X, formerly known as Twitter, YouTube, and SoundCloud. So, Jessica, do you have anything to promote? What's coming up? What's in the pipeline? Where should we find you? All right, so where should the people find you if they want to check out some of your stuff or just, you know, get in contact?
You guys can find me on Instagram or not, I won't mind, at Jessica OOITF, like the letters.
Yeah, OOITF, okay.
And yeah, I'm not going to give any of my socials actually.
Production company?
Yeah, but it's empty, so I don't want to like give
it's
it
fine though.
Okay. You can also find the production company that I'm in the process of developing on Instagram at Draft 7 Productions. Mm-hmm. 7 like the number.
So DRAFT 7 productions.
Yes.
I'm not gonna spell productions, just, you know, spell it right.
Spell it correctly.
And productions with an S, just normal, because some people like to put Z.
Bruv, just like, no one would think that there was a Z unless like you specifically said it.
Yeah, it's true actually. Anyway, so Jessica OOITF and Draft 7 Productions. If you want to be featured on Let Me Tell You, Let Me TALEU, then send in your stories, your thoughts, either via DM on any of our socials. So that's at SWPodUK, or you can email them to SWPodUK@gmail.com. These will always be anonymous, don't worry. Whether I read them out or if you want to send a voice note, which you can do via email or DM, we'll definitely distort your voice so it's unrecognizable. But please keep voice notes to 2 minutes maximum, okay? All right, so make sure you lock into the next episode to hear more casual commentary on a song and a book that share a common theme. I've been your host, Mandy, and you've been listening to SW Pod Sounds and Stories. See you lot in the next one.
Bye.
Bye.